You're listening to KDRT-LP here in Davis, California. And this is Lois Richter. And the program is That's Life. And every week I come on and I talk to you and I play music for you. And sometimes I have people to interview. I don't have an interview set up yet for today. But, who knows what's going to happen next. It's always a surprise. I'm having trouble getting the CD out. Hold on. There we go. It's always a surprise. I hope that's why you tune in. I hope you like surprises. It would be upsetting if you didn't like surprises. That opening song was, of course, from Margie Adams. That's the opener that she has allowed me to use for years and years and years. I used to use it on the television show when I was doing TV shows. And then 10 years ago, a little more than 10 years ago now, we started doing radio. And I just talked to Margie last year sometime. She's doing well. She has given up on touring. She's not doing touring anymore. She's not producing any more records or CDs or anything. But she's still around. She is now doing counseling and she's a very perceptive woman, very interesting discussions and things. So, Margie Adam, M-A-R-G-I-E-A-D-A-M, used to live here in Davis and then moved to the Bay Area. So I think I'm going to start off by playing you some music. This is a new CD that I just got recently, and it is by Jeff Peterson, one of my favorite artists. And this one is called Slack Key Travels. Now, for those of you who haven't listened to the show long enough to have heard about Jeff, he is from Maui. That's the island that has the big mountain on it, Haleakala. And there's a lot of cattle ranges and panioli, which is the cowboys, in the Hawaiian cowboys. And they brought with them from Portugal, I think it was, the ukulele and the guitar and a style of playing that was not the same as the traditional mainland style. And slack key is what things have grown into over the years. So a slack key guitar is something that is, common in the Hawaiian Islands. Makawao is the name of a little town up on the side of the mountain. By the way, that whole side of the mountain is just called upcountry. So whenever you're down on the shore and you talk about upcountry, that's what it means. Different parts of the mountain are either very, very dry or very, very wet or somewhere in between. And Makawao is a town that has lots and lots and lots of history and lots of cowboys and stuff like that. So the first song I'm going to play for you is by Jeff Peterson, and it is called Makawao Chimes. So I hope you're going to enjoy this one. And let's see that button right there. Here we go. And that's Jeff Peterson's Makawao Chimes. We have a situation here where I am not allowed to play more than a certain number of cuts by this person or off of this CD. So, although I had planned on playing you the whole thing today, I'm not allowed to do that anymore. So I'll play you a couple of cuts from this and a couple of cuts from something else, and we'll just sort of work our way through this over the weeks. I was going to read you some stuff. So the article I thought I was going to read you, I can't find on my little iPad here. Isn't it terrible? So I've got this other thing. You know, I like to birdwatch. And one of my favorite ways of watching birds is to sit at my house and see who shows up. See who's there, who's coming to the feeder, who's out in the backyard, who's coming to the flowers. I used to put out bird seed in the wintertime, chopped up sunflower seeds and put them out, and get the winter visitors, the white-crowned sparrows, the golden-crowned sparrows, the juncos, those folks. But now that we have squirrels, it doesn't work very well, because if I put out seeds, I'm just feeding the squirrels. And if I try and put seeds that hang up, I tried a seed feeder to get the goldfinches, and that's where you hang up a sock filled with Niger seeds. Well, the squirrels figured out a way to jump on that pole and rip open the seed bag and eat the seeds, and that didn't work real well. So you probably having the same problem if you live in Davis now. And so I thought I'd talk to you a little bit about who you might see in your yard, what birds you might see in your yard, and why you might see them or why you might not see a particular bird or other. So here we've got a guide to help you attract birds to your garden. It's called What Birds Eat! Exclamation point. And I got this from the website at Cornell University. They have an excellent ornithology department. They have lots of services and lots of things. Coming up is the Great Backyard Bird Count. I'll tell you more about that in a little bit. But first of all, let's talk about what you might see and what you might not see in your yard. I'm assuming you're living in town and have a normal-sized lot and, nothing too spectacular. So you probably wouldn't see raptors, kites, owls, sparrowhawks, shrikes, red-tailed hawks, all that sort of thing, unless you have extremely tall trees. So in my case, I'm in South Davis, and there are some very tall trees, and we in fact have a pair of kites that nest in the neighborhood. Wonderful to see. Last year, we had a couple of juvenile red-tailed hawks that hung out on the pole lines next to an open field that hadn't been developed at the corner of Mason Montgomery. There's this field. It's was supposed to become a church property. Actually, there were two sites, both of which were owned by churches, and the one on the corner is still vacant. The other one got sold to a developer and got developed into all those new houses that are out there. I say new. I mean, they've been there 5 years probably. New to me. So on those poles along there, you might see kites or maybe a kestrel, maybe a red-shouldered hawk or a red-tailed hawk even, because the field nearby is not ag land. It's just wild growing. And so there's rodents and an occasional rabbit or something. So you have food available for those creatures. Those are raptors that eat meat of some sort. So you're probably not going to see them in your backyard unless you have a good bunch of little birds, and you might get one of these forest birds like a Sharpshin hawk or a Cooper's hawk swoop by and grab lunch in the fly and take off, but probably not living in your yard. If you're over on campus, however, they do have Cooper's hawks nesting over there, and they feed on the baby jaybirds and stuff like that. So birds that fly around to eat. These are the flycatchers and the kingbirds and the phoebes and things that swoop on to insects that in flight. Swallows are one big one. They're not here in the winter, but they're here in the summertime. And barn swallows will occasionally nest in the eaves of a home. If you don't want them nesting right over your front door, you can try things to exclude them, but I got to tell you, the only way to truly exclude them is to go out every single day and remove the mud if they have started building a nest. And if you don't keep up with it, they're going to be in there and they're going to be making their nest and they're going to be laying their eggs before you get around to doing it, and then you're sort of stuck. If you want to put them, let's say you have them coming right over your front door, and you want them someplace else nearby, but not right there, you can try a little trick, which is to take the smallest nail that you can imagine, a little brad, and go on a ladder up in the eaves and about, you know, maybe an inch below the overhang or something, tap it in over where you'd like them to build a nest. It's a small enough protrudence that it no other bird is going to be able to land on it, so you're not going to have a place for the predator birds like the scrub jays to eye the nest. But it's enough of a protruding object that it can help get started when you're building the mud for the nest. And so it doesn't always work, certainly. And if you don't have anything, if you have never had swallows there, you don't bother doing it. But if you're trying to move them over 5 feet or 10 feet, yeah, you might try that. See if it works. And then knock down all the other stuff. Okay, so that I sort of got distracted there with barn swallows, huh? But in your neighborhood, in addition to barn swallows, you might have black phoebes. These are, again, birds that fly around and get the insects over the little meadow in the neighborhood park if they've got little flying things. They help with the mosquito problem, too. They will sometimes be on waterways. That's where it's most common to find them. If you have a friend comes and says, I want to see a black phoebe, and I want to know that I'm going to see one today, well, I can tell you, go down and walk the arboretum and look at all the sticks and things at the edges of the waterway there, because a black phoebe will land on a twig or at the bottom of a branch or a little cattail or something, wait till it sees an insect, fly out, grab it, come back and sit on the same little branch. And they have their favorite branches. So if you walk up on it and you startle one from their favorite branch, just wait, just stand quietly, and it'll come back, because they like to have that little territory. In walking around my neighborhood, I'm in South Davis again, there are several little parks where there are resident black phoebes that you will frequently, especially dawn and dusk, see flying over, flutter out and snag a something, flutter back and sit there. In the wintertime, we have yellow-rumped warblers, and they're also little flycatchers. They flit about and get insects. They also cull the insects off of plants, so frequently you'll see them hopping about bushes and checking out, seeing if there's any aphids or anything they can eat. And they will occasionally do little flycatching, too. So those are all residential possibilities. The kingbirds, which are not here in the winter but are here in the summer, generally don't come into town. You would see them along the pole lines, along the lines on the telephone poles out in the countryside. And they're creamy yellowish in the front, and in the back they're a gray brown, a light colored thing. A very pretty bird, and they do fly catching too. They're called a western kingbird. Some of the other things that do fly catching are migratory. So Pacific slope flycatcher, or there's a number of them. And they may pass through, they may come through your yard, but unless you're actually paying attention and watching, you probably wouldn't notice, because they would be there and then, you know, a couple days later they'd be gone. So migratory birds. So what can you do if you want to get these flycatchers? Well, the first thing is don't spray. Don't put chemicals out in your yard. Don't use pesticides or herbicides. Because when you do that, you're killing off the insect life that these things are going to eat. So that's the first one. Second one is if you have a water garden or a fountain, these birds might be attracted. The flying insects are attracted to the water and the birds are attracted to the insects. In general, if you have either flycatchers or songbirds in your yard, having a little water feature is a nice thing because then they can get a drink. But you want to make sure that you don't have something that is going to get mosquitoes. And so you have to be careful with how you are handling that situation. We can go into how to deal with that in a while. But for right now, there are insect and fruit or berry eating birds, such as mockingbirds and jays. Well, jays will eat most anything. Flickers that are here in the wintertime, flickers are one of our large woodpeckers, but they don't just peck wood on the tree, they also feed on the ground, which is an unusual behavior for a woodpecker. Most other woodpeckers don't do that, but they do. Beautiful birds. And if you don't know what a flicker looks like, you might want to look online and get some pictures because they're gorgeous. The ones we have here are called the red-shafted flicker. And there are different varieties, different races of flicker in different places around the country. But ours are just spectacular. Mockingbirds, you probably know, they're in most neighborhoods. Jays are all over here in town. Other things that come through, cedar waxwings, you might see huge flocks following the fruit as it ripens. So if you've got a neighborhood tree that has persimmons, you might see a flocks of cedar waxwings scarfing up on that stuff when they're ripe. They don't generally have a particular, how shall I put that? They like to be in flocks. They go with the harvest. And so they don't have a particular range. If you see a scrub jay in your backyard, it's probably the same scrub jay that you saw yesterday or the day before and the week ago and all that stuff. And it might be the same scrub jay that you see in your neighbor's yard, but it's not going to be the same scrub jay that is a mile away because they have a home range, a territory, if you will, that they hang out in. That is not true of things like the cedar waxwings that are moving around looking for the next opportunity, the next tree, the next set of bushes, the next bunch of berries. And so they move around. So they might pass through your neighborhood once or twice or three times, but they aren't going to be constantly there. We also have some that are little flocks that do that migrate through your neighborhood thing that are totally different. The cedar waxwings are fairly large birds. They're not quite as big as a robin, but still quite large. And they're up in the top of the trees, and they're bright and bold and easy to see. And then they have these things called bush tits. And the bush tits are little tiny things, not quite as small as a hummingbird, but we're getting down in that range there. And they have fluffy little bodies and then a proportionally long tail. So I always think of them as looking like musical notes. They're constantly moving, and they're always in little groups of 6 or 7 or 10 or 12. I've never seen giant flocks, and I've never seen one alone. I wouldn't be surprised if they did pair off when they're nesting, but when I see them, it's because this is a little group flitting from tree to tree and bush to bush and looking for tiny, tiny, tiny insects. Okay, so the way that you know bush tits are around is you might hear this very soft little shh, 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 very tiny little noises. And I was working in the garden, and I heard this soft little set of noises, and it was like being surrounded by a cloud, and then it passed along. And I couldn't figure out what it was right off. But then I figured out, in the bushes right overhead, right where I was working, a flock of bush tits had come by. And all of them are always making those little noises. Well, it turns out what it is it's a survival mechanism, I guess. It's a way of keeping the little flock together. These are tiny birds. These birds would make a snack for some raptor flying by. And if you're alone, you're in more danger than it's if you are in a group. Because if you're in a group, well, if there's 12 of you, you've got, you know, a 1 in 12 chance of being the one that gets swiped. And if you're on the middle of the group instead of the edge, then you probably are safe. So the way this works is each little bird is making these calls. Here I am. Here I am. Here I am. That's not what it sounds like, but that's what it's the context of what they're trying to convey. Here I am. And they're listening for their other group members going, here I am, here I am. So if I hear that only in one direction, not all the way around me, but just in one direction, that means I'm on the edge. I better move towards that sound so I can get back in the middle. Be safer that way. And so this constant little it's a safety mechanism. Isn't that cool? I think that's cool. Okay, I'm going to read you some more about the birds and everything in a little bit. But first, I want to play you another song. Again, we're with Jeff Peterson's Slack Key Travels CD. This one is called Hotel Street. And I hope you're going to enjoy this one. And there you go. Come on, why aren't you playing? Thank you. And that was Jeff Peterson's Hotel Street from his Slack Key Travel CD. So we were talking about birds. Most of the songbirds are insect eaters. I told you about the yellow-rumped warblers, which do little fly-catching kinds of things. But then there's also a lot of them that are just don't necessarily do it on the fly, but they hop around in the bushes and they clean the aphids off of the shrubs and they hang out in the trees and they get all that sort of stuff. So some of them that you might see in your yard, ruby-crowned kinglets. Now, most of the time that I've seen ruby-crowned kinglets, they have been in a more wild situation. I don't mean wild as in raucous, but I mean as in unplanned, unpruned. So, for example, if you have a big old valley oak in your yard, which is a huge tree, and most people don't have them in their yards, but if you have one there, it would be very common to see a ruby-crowned kinglet because there's so much insect life in a giant old valley oak. But other things that you might see around would be, some of the warblers. Most of those migrate through. We don't have any that stay here in the summertime that I can think of. Other songbirds come around. Some birds, like the robins, aren't in the trees eating. They're on the ground, eating the insects on the ground. So again, if you have a lawn and you have sprayed it and killed all of the insect life, then you're not going to get birds harvesting anything from the lawn. But if you haven't, you might find robins or, again, those flickers and things like that. Robins also eat berries. And so if you have a toyon bush in the wintertime, you might see robins feasting on that. Or you might see them in bunches. Not giant flocks like the cedar waxwings, but a small flock. Robins are a pretty big bird, and so they have a large area that they hang out in, and their range, their home base area, can be quite wide, quite broad. So if you have a robin in your yard one morning, don't expect to see it there every morning because it's probably in your neighbor's yard and then two streets over and a couple of streets beyond that and, going where the food is kind of thing. For the insect feeders, there's no way that you can provide them with food. They just find it. But what you can do is make your yard attractive by providing cover for them. These are usually fairly small birds. Not the robins, they're big ones. But the kinglets and the little warblers. So they would like to have a place where the bushes have enough foliage covering them that they can hide so that the hawks can't find them. The cats can't get up into them. For me, xylosma bush is the bush that I think is probably the best cover. All winter long, I have white-crowned sparrows that hang out in there. They're not nesting because they don't nest here in the winter. They nest up in the hills in the summer. But they're hanging out there, and they're grouping up, and, it's nice. And in the summertime, I have lots of little warblers coming through. Again, so xylosma is a bush that it's an evergreen bush. It has leaves all the way around it, but the interior where it is shaded out, the leaves fall off, but the twigs stay. And so there's lots of openings for little birds to go through, but a big cat, big relative to the bird, couldn't get in easily. And so it's a very nice, safe place. There's lots of other bushes that are good for that. But xylosma, because it's evergreen, is one of my personal favorites. The other thing you can do is provide water. And again, you want to make sure that you're not just having a big barrel sitting out in the backyard. That doesn't really help the birds. Raccoons might like it to wash their food in, but it's not going to be useful to the smaller birds. Think about it. If you wanted to go and get a drink, would you want to be in a swimming pool trying to get a drink out of a swimming pool for you, for your size? Yeah. So if you do have a water feature in back, and the easiest one is a half barrel and just fill it up with water and put some mosquito-eating fish in it, and there you go. But anything that tries to drink from it could fall in. So what I would suggest, and what I've done in the past, is to take a branch, or two or three, and set them so that the one end is in the bottom of the pool, where whatever that water feature is, and the other extends up and over the edge. And that means that a bird can land on the branch, hop down until it's just in the right spot to dip over and get a drink, and hop back up and be totally safe. If a mouse happens to fall in, it has a way to climb out. It's the wildlife is there. It makes it easy. Another thing that is very, very nice, if you do want to have a water feature, is to have a small pump in the bottom of the pool. And again, you put it in some wire mesh or something so that the fish aren't going to try and swim in it and get stuck in there or plug it up with dirt or leaves or anything. So you put it in there, and then you run the tube up, and you have something slanted that is lying into the pond or overlapping the edge of the pond so that you can take your tube and run the water to the top maybe of a board or something and let it just run down and back into the pool. And what you've done there is you've created a situation where the water is maybe, what, two drops thick? It's tiny. It's an eighth of an inch thick. But it's there. And any bird who wants to can come up and land on that, take a drink, or maybe even take a bath. I mean, if they were a small bird, they can take baths in any places. In fact, those bush tits, I've watched them taking baths on leaves on a bush because the sprinkler was on, and a little bit of water would collect on the leaf, and this whole flock of bush tits were in there taking a bath. It was just the most silly thing I've ever seen. So cute. Okay, so water is always a good thing. And nesting sites, if you have a kind of bird that nests here, most of our littlest birds don't. Most of them either migrate through or are only wintering here. I can't think of any little bird that you would provide nesting sites for. But if you want to try, a vine is a nice nesting site for hummingbirds. You won't know if you have a hummingbird nest in there because they're so small you can barely find it. But that's always a fun thing to do. As far as feeding hummingbirds, hummingbird feeders are wonderful. Flowers for hummingbirds are wonderful. If you're trying to establish a hummingbird feeder and you haven't gotten hummingbirds in your yard yet, the best thing I can suggest for you is make the feeder, hang it where you want it, and then go buy some hanging plant with flowers on it that are brightly flowered, that are easy to see, and hang it next to the hummingbird feeder. That will encourage hummingbirds that are flying overhead, you know, far, far away, going, oh, what's this? Well, there's a new flower down there. They might see it. They might come by. They might check it out. As long as they're in the neighborhood, they're going to check out everything, and they might find your feeder. Once the hummingbirds have found your feeder, you don't need to worry about them finding it again. They remember where it is. They'll come back. So then you can, you know, whenever that hanging basket poops out, because it probably will, because Davis is so hot and dry that you'd have to water it all the time to keep it alive. But after that's gone, they'll still keep coming back to your hummingbird feeder once they found it. If you wish to do this, here is the formula for the fake nectar that we use to feed our hummingbirds. 1 part sugar, 4 parts water, and that's it. No food color. Your liquid does not need to be red. If you want anything red on the hummingbird feeder, the outside of the tube is all that needs to be red. Or some of the hummingbird feeders have like little fake flowers on them. That's fine. But don't put more chemicals into the liquid. Why? Well, think about it. Hummingbirds are little tiny things. Whatever you put in there is going to go into the hummingbird and accumulate in there. Why would they want red dye number whatever? That's not a good idea for them. And they don't need it. So better you should do that. If you decide to feed hummingbirds, more power to you. Thank you. Do not stop It is not something where you stop in the wintertime. That whole myth about if you feed them, you keep them from migrating is not true. The hummingbirds that we have here all year round, the Anna's hummingbirds and the black-chinned hummingbirds, they're here all year round. They're not migrating. The hummingbirds that migrate through, if they're on their way from, oh, I don't know, Alaska to Mexico, they're going to keep going. They might hang around for a day or two as a rest. That'd be nice. But you're not going to change their migration pattern. But if you suddenly stopped in the middle of winter feeding the hummingbirds that are in your yard because there's this wonderful perpetual flower there, suddenly aren't going to have any food, and they're going to have to go looking around for food. So best not to stop it in the winter. Just keep going. The key for a hummingbird feeder is you must keep it clean. If you put sugar water out and just let it set out, it will grow. It will grow bacteria. The things that grow in it will make toxins. It can poison your little hummingbirds. This is not a good thing. So if you plan to do a hummingbird feeder, expect to, in the wintertime, change it once a week. In the summertime, change it much more often than that. Every couple of days, if it's really hot, sometimes I change it every day. You just don't want the stuff growing in it. How do you keep it from growing? Well, a couple of ways you can do that. The easiest way I have found is if you change it all the time, it's not going to be too bad in the feeder. And so I take the sugar, you know, quarter cup of sugar, cup of water, put it in one of those big measuring cups, and nuke it until it's boiling. And so it has sterilized anything that happened to be in it. And then when I put it in the hummingbird feeder, it's now sterile. So changing it is this process. Nuke the new syrup or nectar and let it cool off. And Jim usually does that overnight. The next day, go out, take a plate with you, set the hummingbird feeder on the plate and carry it in. That keeps the drips from dripping onto your carpet and causing ants to come, which you don't want. Take it into your kitchen and dump out the old stuff, wash out the bird feeder. Some feeders I occasionally will put in water and actually microwave, but that's a little harsh on most of them. And so if you just wash it really well, don't use something that's going to remain on it. If you decide you're going to use soap and water to clean it, that's fine. But then rinse and rinse and rinse and rinse and rinse so that in the end, there's nothing on it. And I only have to scrub it every once in a while. I don't have to do it all the time. Depends again on how hot it got. All right, and then you fill it up with the cooled nectar, and you take it back out, and you hang it up, and the hummingbirds come going, where was you? Where were you? It was gone. Oh, are you back? Are you back? Are you back? Is it here? Oh, thank goodness it's here. And they'll love you for it. Hummingbirds don't just eat nectar, by the way. They will also eat aphids and insects and little spiders and things, especially when they have their babies. They need the protein to feed the babies because the babies grow quite fast. And they are the earliest nesting bird that I know of. I have a friend who, outside her window that she didn't use much, there was a vine growing and a hummingbird came to build a nest. And so she saw it and she was able to take pictures. It was really neat. The next year, in the same spot, she noticed that the hummingbird was back and laid its eggs on January 1st. So, yep, earliest nesting birds that I know of. Okay, we're going to do a little bit more music. I think I'll do one more. Jeff Peterson's, that's all I'm allowed to do. Mauka is the name of this one. And that's Smoka by Jeff Peterson. All right. Well, I'll play more for you on some other day of Jeff's songs, and you'll hear more of that. I did want to play you one more Hawaiian song. This is by a fellow named Iz. But before I do that, let me tell you about some of the other fine programs we have here at KDRT. This is Creating and Maintaining a Loving Life May Be the Greatest Art of All. Heart-to-heart host Jitan offers tips and inspiration for living a loving life richly and lightly. Check the Davis Enterprise for guests and weekly topics. Call-in questions are welcome. Heart-to-Heart airs live on KDRT Wednesdays, 12 noon to 1. For replay times, visit kdrt.org and click the Schedule tab. Now, here is something that you might not know about Catered. Catered hosts many pop-up live music events, loosely categorized under the moniker Live Dirt, but there is one Live Dirt event that can be planned on monthly. This is the KDRT Live from Armadillo Music for Davis's downtown, for the downtown Davis second Friday Art About. Now, Davis's Art About is something, Davis's Art About is something that happens every month, and there's a whole venue, a whole collection of galleries around town, or just businesses who are opening their doors for the evening and featuring some artist or other. You can find out what's happening for that any particular month by looking for it either in the Davis Dirt or and the Davis Enterprise, or if you go that evening, going to one of the sites, and they'll have a map showing what this month's activities are and who's there. Now, back to our announcement. Every month for the Davis Art About, KDRT co-presents and broadcasts live music and interviews from the Armadillo stage at 6:30 p.m. So mark your calendars and meet us at Armadillo. All right. The next one is Friday, March 10th, and we'll feature Wyatt Hesemeyer as the performer. Okay. All right. So what else do I want to tell you? Well, let's listen to Iz first. See if I can get that up here. It is... Nope. It's a new... There we go. That should do it. All right. This is Iz, I-Z, and he is a musician from Hawaii and playing you one of his lovely, lovely songs.
Danger now. How would they feel? Just imagine it, they came back and saw traffic lights and railroad tracks. How would they feel about this modern city life? Tears would come from each other's eyes, and they would start to realize that our land is in great, great danger now. All the fighting that the king had done to conquer all these islands, now there's condominiums. How would he feel if he saw a
And thank you, Iz, for that lovely song. He's no more with us. You can still find his music abound, but he has left our world. I don't know if you've ever heard his songs, but he's a very, very popular singer in Hawaii. And if you go over there, you'll find dozens of recordings by Iz. Yeah, good guy. Okay, so let's get back to the birds for just a minute. We don't have too much time left in the show. But I wanted to follow up on a little bit more. Some birds, blackbirds, magpies, starlings, etc., are the bigger birds that are mostly out in the fields. You will see them at the edges of town. And you will occasionally see starlings coming into town. But these are not birds that you need to figure out what to put out in order to feed them. They'll eat anything. And they can always find something to eat. Starlings are cavity nesters, so they won't be nesting in your yard unless you happen to have a tree with holes in it for some reason or other. So mostly they're out in the fields. Magpies are big birds, crows, all of those are birds that are going to be feeding in the agriculture lands. Sometimes they will come and nest in big trees in a park, or like in downtown Davis, there are some big trees where they come and roost for the evening, crows especially. Jays and mockingbirds will, again, eat lots of stuff. Jays will eat almost anything. Not insects. I mean, they're not carnivores. Well, they will take the occasional baby bird or eggs out of a nest. They're kind of sometimes a little mean that way. But other kinds of things that you might see in the area are the field birds, like the pheasants and the quail, and they're going to be out. They're not going to be in town. In town, you might see mourning doves. Again, they're ground feeders. They're looking for seed on the ground, things that have fallen. Not too much in your yard unless you happen to put out some bird seed or something like that. But mourning doves do live here year-round, and frequently you'll see them coming into the gutters when there's a runoff from somebody's been watering and there's a little water in a puddle. You might see the crows or the mourning doves or somebody come in and getting a little bit of water there. Okay. So, things to remember when you're trying to attract birds to your yard: don't spray, make good habitat. If you like water, that's fine. Understand that the different birds feed in different places. There are ones that will only